Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, I'm Paco Romaine, and you're listening to episode 92 of SupDoc. On today's show, I talked to comedian-musician Chad Opitz about the documentary series Evil Genius, the true story of America's most diabolical bank heist. Evil Genius is a 2018 true crime docuseries about the murder of Brian Wells, a high-profile 2003 incident often referred to as the Collar Bomb or Pizza Bomber case and can currently be watched on Netflix. Evil Genius is one of those docs that keeps you saying no way and wanting to binge watch the entire series. Seriously, it's nuts. If the Apple Dumpling Gang were Mensa members with a taste for revenge, money, and murder, you'd have the makings of Evil Genius. My guest, Chad Opitz, is a comedian who is frankly hilarious. He's opened for Michelle Wolf, Scott Thompson, Neil Hamburger, and many more. He was recently a featured guest on the Doug Loves Movies podcast. Side note, there are spoilers in this conversation, so if you have not watched the entire series, press pause and return back. And now, here's Chad. Hi, Chad.
Hello. How you doing, Paco?
I'm very good. Thank you. Thank you for coming on SupDoc.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Of course. Chad Opitz is our guest today. The comedian, actor? Are you an actor?
I mean, I've done acting in the past, but it's not really like not that much currently.
Right.
So I wouldn't, I can act, but I'm not, I don't know.
Would you call yourself an actor?
Oh, no. I don't know. I don't think I would, honestly. It took me a long time to just call myself a comic.
Right.
I mean, I was probably 3 years in before I started saying I was a comic.
Why is that? Why do artists do that?
I'm not sure, but I think it's, I mean, a big factor for me was that was not at all, like, I wasn't making any money doing it. And even now, it's, like, not a huge part of, like, my income. So I just felt odd, even though I was going out every single day doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that was a factor for me, was to actually be making some money doing it.
I feel like artists, in particular, comedians and musicians have like that imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
Where they're like, you know, I play 5 instruments and I've traveled the world and sold 1,000 CDs, but I'm not really a musician, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I for sure felt that way for like a long time.
You did?
Yeah. And but honestly, it wasn't until I really moved here to San Francisco that I started like being okay saying that I was a comedian, because that was a huge reason for me coming here. Was to do more comedy. And I was like, well, why should I say I'm not a comic?
Yeah. So let's talk about that for a second. Where did you start? Where are you from?
Oh, I'm originally from Washington State. I was living in Gig Harbor, a little town across the bridge from Tacoma.
Mm-hmm.
But then after college, I moved down to Santa Cruz and I started doing comedy in Santa Cruz while I was like working at a movie theater there.
Yeah. So you went from Seattle to Santa Cruz.
Yeah, and I was doing music up in Washington.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
As a band or as a solo project?
I had like it was just me, but I had like a one-man band thing called Nervous Energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to open for like Neil Hamburger.
Oh, wow.
So I got some pretty decent shows. I was doing probably 4 or 5 shows a month up there.
That's a lot.
Which is pretty good for like music. And
it was funny.
It was mainly, yeah. Almost all the songs were like comedic.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them, but most of them.
And you sang?
Mm-hmm. I'd play keyboard and sing.
Nice. Did you wear a cape at all?
I did not wear a cape. That's I usually bad. Wear like a suit and tie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I could see that with like working with Neil.
I felt the songs were like kind of weird and messed up. So I thought it'd be funnier if I looked sort of classy when I was singing them.
Yeah.
Like I had a song called I Married a Necrophile. About a woman that fucks dead people.
Yeah.
And I wanted to present some class.
Sure. Class it up a bit.
When I was presenting material like that.
Kind of like John Mulaney's thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah, you wear a suit, but like some of the shit can be dark.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That's awesome. So you did that in Seattle. Did you grow up playing music?
I always sang. I mean, I took lessons when I was a kid, and but I didn't really take it seriously at all until like after high school. And I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I was in community college, and I didn't have any clue what I wanted to do. I was kind of interested in psychology, but I knew I didn't want to teach.
Sure.
And I didn't want to be a psychologist. So right. I was like, what the hell am I doing this for? Because almost all my classes were in psychology in community college.
Right.
And so then I was like, well, I mean, I was good at music. Why don't I just give that a shot? Because I really had no idea what I wanted to do. I still sort of don't, aside from just wanting to do comedy. But so I started, I auditioned for Central Washington University to the music program, got in. But I had no idea about, I just knew I wanted to sing. I didn't really know anything about music other right. than that. And like, so theory was like very challenging.
Yeah.
And like, I like skated, but like I got like solid C's, and that was me trying my absolute hardest.
Right.
To like do well in that class.
A good solid C.
Oh, very good solid C.
Yeah.
And I was happy with that because like, it was very, very difficult for me to get through those classes. But everything else was kind of all the performing things were easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then you put together Nervous Energy.
Mm-hmm.
Would you ever play in an actual band? Like, I mean, like a 4-piece, 3-piece?
I never did. I never really felt like I gelled with anybody. A rare person that I, whenever we get together and like try and make music, it actually works really well is DJ Real.
Oh, yeah.
He's like one of the only people I've ever hung out with and been like, oh, this actually makes sense. I think we have a very similar like mindset when it comes to like sounds and things like that, which I've never really felt with anyone else.
I've never seen you guys perform together, but I just love the idea.
Yeah.
The idea in itself seems awesome because I love Nick. I love DJ Real. And I've seen some of your videos on Instagram or whatever, and I could see how that could work. Let's talk about Evil Genius for a sec. What a crazy talk.
Yes, it's excellent. I was grabbed immediately.
Yeah.
Like the first, like, I mean, I'm not sure if I've seen a documentary where within the first like 5 minutes, I was already kind of like just completely wrapped up in it and wanting to know where it was going to go. Like I started watching it late one night. It was like midnight, and I already should have gone to sleep by the time I started it. And then I watched the first one. I was like, I got to watch the second one. Oh, my God. And so I watched the second one. And then I was like, oh, no, I got to keep going. But I had to, like, stop myself because it was like 2:30 in the morning or something like that. And I had to wake up like 8. And I was like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
And it's I ended gripping. Up finishing it the other two a couple nights later. But, man, it was great.
It's classic binge watch doc style, man. Mm-hmm.
And it's short. It's like 4 episodes.
Yeah.
So it's about like a little over 4 hours or something like that.
It's doable. I kind of, you know, I don't know how you feel about this, but I kind of feel like they could have done one.
Yeah. I think, I don't know exactly why they
broke it up
like that. Maybe just because it was like no one would want to watch if it was 4 hours, just 1 4-hour thing.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't need to be broken up, really.
There's some that feel like they do, like Making a Murder seems like it. I mean, that was a 10-part fucking series. Yeah. Or like The Staircase, which is, I think, 13 or something ridiculous. But this one to me seemed like it could have been just a 2-hour doc.
Yeah.
You know, but it's still really good. I mean, the filmmaking is great. Maybe like that dude, the producer guy, he's been part of this for so long. Maybe he just had tons of material, you know, that he wanted to get out. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, he might have had like thousands of hours of footage, just like, well, we can make this into 4, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But do you remember when this happened?
I do. I remember hearing about it. And then they made like a really crappy movie that's sort of based on it.
Oh, that's right.
Remember that Jesse Eisenberg movie? Like 30 minutes or less.
Right.
It uses like that. And I remember like I think the people that were, you know, the victims of the family of the victim was like super mad about it.
Of course.
Understandably so. Because like I had no real idea. I just remember vaguely hearing about it years ago.
Yeah.
And I saw that movie and I was like. Then I read up that like, oh, they used this actual case
right
for this awful comedy. It's like, oh, that is messed up. Like,
yeah.
It really is.
Well, especially when you find out Brian Wells is the guy that was put into the fucking collar, the bomb collar, that they fucking decapitated him.
Yeah.
In order to preserve the collar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's so fucked up in itself.
Yeah.
But I remember when this happened and I was like, I was super captivated by this story because it's so fucking nuts.
Yeah.
Like, and I still remember the footage. I remember watching the news when that guy was fucking doing that weird Neil thing in the, and just being like, hello, got a little bomb on me.
Yeah.
Someone want to, like, I don't know, help? Uh-huh. You know, like, it's so weird to watch that. You
it
know?
Is.
Because he doesn't seem scared.
No. And, like, the thing about, like, when they say that he was, like, you know, got a lollipop or whatever, sucker. At the bank, he's like, what? Like, why would that? So then when you hear about that, are spoilers okay with this?
Oh, yeah. We assume people have seen it. Yeah.
So when they start talking about him being sort of involved, you were like, okay, that sort of makes sense why he was so casual.
Yeah.
So I thought that was sort of a great twist, honestly, in this, when it turns out, like, the producer guy is like, I need to prove that he wasn't involved with this.
Right.
And then it ends up being the case. I thought that was a great way to end it.
Yeah.
But yeah, his whole demeanor during it was very bizarre.
Are you satisfied with that conclusion?
I'm satisfied with, I believe that that was the truth. It's, I don't see why that lady would make that up. There was all kinds of other things that didn't go, that went unanswered that make little to no sense.
Right.
Like, I mean, even the fact that they even did it to begin with makes no sense. Like, what did they think they were actually going to get the money or what?
For being a small town, Erie has its share of bizarre events, but there is nothing that raised so many questions as this case.
The call was made to the pizza shop at 1:30. Brian Wells drove to the site where the pizzas were to be delivered.
The man told police that he was forced to rob the bank.
The FBI believe that whoever built the collar is patient and secretive.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We have Marjorie Deal Armstrong, who, you know, just by herself is worthy, could be a documentary all in herself, you know. And then we have Bill Rothstein, her very large Jewish on-again, off-again boyfriend dude.
He crushes the overalls.
Oh, dude.
Great overall game on this guy.
Nobody does overalls like fucking
pretty good.
William Rothstein.
He has a body built for overalls. It's pretty, it's a beautiful thing to witness.
He does have a body built for overalls. And then the other, you know, the other cohorts that were involved with this shit, and including Brian Wells, who is the guy who gets fucking collared by this stuff. And then, so like your question was like, what, why would they do this? And it seemed like there was, the documentary presents like this idea that PNC, the bank, fucked over Marjorie Deal Armstrong at one point. And this was like retaliation or something, you know, so which also seems kind of strange that like,
But did they, there's no, like, did they think they were actually going to get that money though? Because they clearly set it up so he would not live. Right. Like there's no way, like how would he get that money? How would they get that money to them?
Well, I think like, the first, okay, let's talk about, oh God, there's
why would
so
they
much
it
to talk
so
about.
So difficult for him to get that money to them.
Because like, really?
If it was all about money,
right?
Why would they make it impossible for him to get that money to them?
Right. That's so funny.
It doesn't make any sense.
It does not make any sense, especially because, and as we find out, he wasn't part of it.
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't like, it wasn't like we're going to make all these weird instructions, but it doesn't matter because you're just going to drive it over to us at the fucking radio tower. Because that's not how it went down. So you're right. Like, what's the end game here?
I have no idea. Because like, there's, and it's not like they think he was capable of pulling that off. He would have to be a genius in order to do that,
right?
And like, it was just wasn't, there's no way it was going to happen.
No.
So clearly he was just going to die and they weren't going to get that money.
Right. And then they'd all go to jail.
It's very, very weird.
While also now with the knowledge that they have a person in a freezer.
There's also
that little tidbit. Uh-huh. So
that's a very frightening end of that episode. The first one.
I know.
I got like big goosebumps and stuff. It's just like, that's a phenomenal closer to that episode.
Yeah, it is. That's a great way to end.
You have to watch the next one. Oh, you're like, what? What's going on?
You're like,
here?
Push fucking play now.
Yeah.
And thank God they have skip intro now too on Netflix. Yeah. One of the best additions to Netflix ever.
Save you some 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's just like, nope, get into it now, please. I know that is a great way to end episode one, because you're just like, wait, what the fuck is going on
here? It adds like another horrific element that you weren't expecting.
Yeah absolutely. I mean, yeah, you're not gonna expect that. And then, oh man, there's so much to unravel here, because there's also like the like hoarding thing, you know.
Yeah, that was fascinating, like how every like evil character
were hoarders. They're all hoarders.
Uh-huh.
Was there like a hoarders group,
like
was
real there a bad up? Real bad,
like,
hoarders.
Real bad. I don't know if there's like a stratification of hoarding though. I don't know if you're like a light hoarder and a heavy hoarder.
Have you known any hoarders in your life?
I have. My best friend growing up, his mom was a hoarder, and it was nasty.
Was it to that level?
Oh, yeah. It was nasty.
Okay.
It was nasty.
I've only met, like, one. But, yeah, it was. It wasn't to that level. Their house was relatively clean.
Oh, weird.
It was just boxes and boxes and boxes. But it was clean hoarding, which is
that something? Or is it just being a pack rat? I don't know if there's, like, difference of gray here.
Well, their whole house was covered in boxes. So it was like cardboard boxes of stuff.
So it was organized hoarding.
Organized hoarding, but it was like clearly not good.
Right.
I was like, why is all this shit here?
Was it maze-like?
They had pathways and stuff.
Right. Okay,
so
that's hoarding.
You could get around.
Yeah.
But it was unusual. But it wasn't dirty. It was just very odd.
Huh. Weird.
This was like all dirty. Everything's all strewn about. And it didn't seem there was like any organization to it at all.
No, just... I mean, that's, they say, like, you know, your domicile is a reflection of your mental, you know, abilities or whatever. Yeah. Like, it makes sense. Like, you know, if you're insane, if you're schizophrenic or you're delusional or something, like, your place is going to be a fucking wreck.
Yeah.
You know, so that kind of makes sense. My buddy's mom was a hoarder and their place was disgusting. Mm-hmm. It was nasty, nasty, nasty. And they had mazes because she collected fucking everything, newspapers, just
oof.
And like, she was kind of like Marjorie in a sense, where there's, she's just like had, she just never knew. I feel like she always felt the world was going to end. So like she was, there was like boxes of crackers and box, but like they'd go bad and the cats would get into it. Uh-huh. And the cats ruled this place, buddy's mom's place. Like, there were like 15 cats, and I'd go over there because nobody else would, and I felt bad for him. Yeah. And of course, his name was Bobby. Like, they're always named. It's always like Bobby or Dakota.
Yeah, Dakota. It's either Bobby or Dakota. Like, what? What a jump that is.
Yeah, but poor Bobby. But yeah, I mean, so obviously in the first episode, we learn a lot about Marjorie. So it's like. Mm-hmm. It's also classic filmmaking too, where the narrator, who's also the producer, is like, there's two things you need to know about Marjorie. And already you're like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Like, whenever someone sits you down and like, oh, you're dating Denise?
Yeah.
There's two things you need to know about Denise. Yeah.
He had a good voice too. It lended well to the creepiness, I thought.
It was very soft.
Yeah.
Yeah. You let the story do most of that, you know? Yeah, I know. I agree. But what do you think about Marjorie? Like, what's your... You know,
I thought it was kind of I've seen people be like, I don't get why people, or they said that she was very manipulative and large. The people were entranced by her, whatever. It's like, I could see that. Like, people were like, oh, she was ugly or whatever. Like, yeah, later on. But like earlier on, it seems like she was really cute and stuff.
Well, that's kind of what her friend was saying, that she was like super popular.
Yeah.
And beautiful. I'm also,
and she probably, her mental illness probably just got worse and worse the long, you know, more and, you know, as things progress.
Yeah.
So maybe it was just like earlier on it wasn't so severe, and she was like really charming and nice most of the time, and then you'd only see little like glimmers of that at moments until like later on it just kind of overtook her.
Yeah.
So I can totally understand. And we didn't really get to see that side of her. All we got to see was her after she's kind of been ravaged by this. And so we didn't really get to know the like charming side to her that I'm sure people saw. Like the friend of hers that they talked to, I completely believe her, like that she like was probably a really cool lady most of the time.
Yeah.
And but that's just something we don't get to see in this a lot.
No.
We just get to see the psycho.
Right. So. Which I believe, like, to, for me, if I had any real complaints about this, like, it would be not knowing enough about her early life.
Yeah.
And what... Was this an onset of something that happened to her?
Uh-huh.
Was she born like this?
Yeah.
Did something happen to her when she was a kid that like fucked her up?
Totally, yeah.
You know, like they don't really, I kind of feel like they didn't really try to like give us the full picture on Marjorie. Mm-hmm. I mean, even though she is, it's literally called evil genius because she says in one of the lines, I'm not an evil genius.
Yeah.
You know, so like it's about her. She is the subject of this fucking. She's on the poster. It's her face on the poster.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, why not give us more information about who she is?
And that was one of those, like, I felt the same way about, because they briefly talked to her, like her dad. But it's really just kind of a couple minutes, maybe. And I thought the same thing about the Bill character, where it's like he, the way they present his life is like completely normal.
Right.
And then all of a sudden he's just a nut bar.
Right.
And like when they talk to his buddy, it's like, holy shit, I had no clue who this guy was.
Right.
Like I didn't even know this guy. And it's just like, what? But again, maybe that's something that they just can't find out, you know?
Hmm.
Like
who
are they going to talk to about it?
Yeah. Well,
maybe all those people are dead.
Yeah.
You know,
that's true. I mean, they do have, I guess maybe the dad, if the dad did something, he's certainly not going to open up about that. And that seemed to be. Yeah, because they talked to, so Bill Rothstein, her boyfriend, Mr. Overalls, like they talked to one of his best friend, and then they also talked to a state trooper who kind of knew him as well.
Uh-huh.
And even he was like, yeah, he was at like my in-law's wedding, you know, and he seemed really nice. And there's no way he could do something like this.
Yeah.
You know? One of those kind of things, which goes to show, like, if you're going to murder somebody, you should be like really cool to people.
Yeah.
You know, because then nobody's going to think you're the one that did it.
Yeah.
And they're like, not Chad.
Yeah.
Sweet Chad.
No.
No, come on.
Mm-hmm.
He's been nice to me. There's no way. There must be someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, I fucking did it.
Yep.
I got away with it. But yeah, so then we find out after episode one that there's a body in the freezer.
Mm-hmm.
And
we haven't really even been introduced to Bill at this point.
No.
He's just a voice on the phone at the end of the first episode.
Yeah. And what a weird 911 call.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, you come down to 8895 Peach Street, you're going to find a body in the freezer.
Uh-huh.
They're like, and who are you?
Yeah.
He's like, well, I don't want to say that now. I'm just here at this house. And
yeah, and his tone in the phone call is very bizarre.
I know. Yeah.
It's like there's a sense of desperation to it. But again, it's pretty... calm in general.
What I can't figure out is why. So they orchestrate a bank robbery. They kill a guy whose name is, let's see, I fucking wrote that.
It was
that.
Marjorie's like
Jim
boyfriend,
Roden.
Right? Jim Roden?
Roden.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Jim Roden, Marjorie's boyfriend.
Yeah.
Is killed and shoved into a freezer.
Yeah.
So then they do this fucking weird ass bank robbery. Then 3 weeks later, Bill calls the cops.
Yeah.
To say there's a fucking body in the freezer. You need to come investigate this, but it has nothing to do with the bank robbery or whatever.
Yeah.
You know,
I like how he states that.
Yeah.
It's like, why the fuck did you mention that?
But later on in like episode four, the documentary people basically say Bill's covering for her because he wouldn't say. Remember on his deathbed, I'm jumping all around, but fuck
it. Yeah, yeah.
Like on his deathbed, they're like, did you have anything to do with it? Now's the time. And he's like signing no. You know?
Yeah.
So he's still saving her.
Mm-hmm.
But why call the cops then about the body?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. It's very bizarre.
Especially that when they could have put him in, like, done the fucking Fargo thing and put him in the wood chipper.
Do you think that she, like, physically threatened him or something? Said, I'm going to kill you like I killed him or something?
Whoa.
And he was like, he was sort of desperate enough to think that maybe he could get them to arrest her. I don't know.
But it doesn't seem like his, well, maybe, it doesn't seem like his actions like he was threatened, because he goes over there and helps get the body and stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm not sure. It just seems really odd to me that they would throw themselves, because basically you have the pizza delivery guy, Brian Wells, is dead. Mm-hmm. He didn't say anything to the cops.
Mm-hmm.
He never confessed and never gave up any information. So why call the cops and get yourself involved in something when you're only, what was it, a mile or less from where the bank was?
Who? Because Bill and Marjorie are dead, so we're not going to get anything from them now.
No.
But what about the other guy? Is he alive? The guy, the fishing buddy?
Ken Barnes?
Yeah.
Kenny Barnes?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in prison.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he's like one of the only people that might be able to provide information now.
Yeah, and he did. I mean, he talked about the staging and how Brian came to the radio tower. Mm-hmm. Like, later on, he does more of a confession.
Yeah.
Because he's in prison, and he's really in digging prison, because he's like, hey, I don't have to be high anymore, you know, and I get fucking meals, and people are cool to me. So I think he does kind of confess a little bit. But there was always like the waters were muddled around whether or not Brian Wells was directly involved.
Yeah. But the whole setup, it's the first episode is so fascinating because it goes into all of the nutty things that they did for this pizza guy to do in order to rob the bank and get them the money, and all the crazy, like that cane gun that was like,
that was
functional. And then all the little pieces of things that they had in the bomb.
Right.
That were like
red herrings,
the like walkie talkie or some shit, or like, it wasn't a phone.
It was a plastic cell phone
for no reason.
Yeah.
All the stuff like that I found really fascinating.
It's absolutely fascinating.
And I was like, why would that be included? And like, I don't know why I'm so fixated on that cane gun. I was like,
because it's
why
bizarre.
Was that even part of it? Like, it's so weird. And the fact that it worked.
Yeah. And it was loaded.
And just what the hell was that? Like, why did they make it? What was the whole point of it? They never even really delve into that.
No. I think there's almost too much for like them to focus. I mean, they're focusing on the characters and not like the props.
Yeah.
You know, but like the fact that it was a real fucking cane gun is insane. Yeah. And then like when we get this little bit of tidbit that fucking kills me is that when he was leaving, he was twirling it like Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah. Yeah. Which also makes you think like, oh, he's probably involved with it somehow.
Right.
'Cause why would you act that way if But again, like maybe he really did think it was all a big joke. But then, if that was the case, why would he even go to the bank?
Right.
Right? Would you like fucking, if you thought it was a joke at all, I wouldn't go in there and try and rob the bank.
Well, I think, everyone was probably promised money, like $250,000, you know, like split up four ways or five ways is a lot of cash. And like, sounds like maybe he was trying to get into the pimping game. Right,
yeah,
I guess because he had all those hookers numbers and stuff, and like,
yeah, but the way they talked about it was like they just basically surrounded him, jumped him, put that on him, told him to do this. So why would he think he'd get anything out of it?
Oh, right. Yeah,
you know, like, but then like, yeah, when he's laid down, the thing starts beeping or whatever. Maybe it dawned on him, like,
yeah,
holy shit, like this is
a
reality.
That's nuts, man.
It is nuts.
I mean, if you're not involved, you're fucking just regular fucking pizza delivery dude, right? Someone ordered a fucking sausage and extra cheap pies, you know? You go to this radio tower.
Which is already kind of weird.
Right.
Like, why did he even go?
And it's next
to... Can you drop this off? There's not even a house there. It's like you're at the fucking radio tower?
Yeah, you drive
back.
That's
not regulation, is it?
That's not regulation.
Can you do that as a pizza person?
Domino's would not allow that.
No.
I don't think so. Papa John's would, because fuck Papa John's. But not Domino's. But Yeah, so he goes, which also, the radio tower is next to Bill Rothstein's house.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, what?
I thought that was really stupid.
Of course.
Like, yeah, wouldn't they make it a little further away?
That's what I mean. They're like a bumbling gang. It's the apple dumpling gang of like self-proclaimed geniuses.
Yeah, that really made no sense at all.
All we need is Buddy Hackett in this story and we'll be set.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, he goes there. So if you go there, deliver a fucking pie and these people come out and punch you and put a collar around you with a bomb. Yeah. My first stop is the cops.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then like the fucking bomb squad.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's where I'm going.
Yep.
I'm not going to the fucking bank. Mm-hmm. And then they give you. So then if they hand you a cane gun and say, here's a cane gun, wouldn't you just be like, well, fucking unlock it here. Yeah. I'm pointing the cane gun at you now.
Yeah.
Unlock
that's a
me.
Good that's a good point. Here's a functioning gun.
Yeah.
Now
go.
Yeah.
Do our bidding.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's very strange. God damn. I didn't think about that factor. Yeah, if they get like that's very weird.
Yeah. Here, we're gonna make you go rob a bank. Here's now, a gun. Now like, get.
Okay, now take this fucking collar off me or I'll blow your head off.
Yeah.
Huh. God damn.
It's very
fascinating.
And let's take a few minutes to talk about this bomb.
Yes.
Like what the fuck is going on with this thing? And like it's massive. Because when they show them, I didn't realize until seeing this documentary how fucking big it is. It's like this giant box on his chest.
Yeah.
And he has a t-shirt that says Guess.
Yeah.
On it. Like what is going on here?
I don't know. There's so many elements to that thing that were just, and they never really, nothing's ever really solved.
No.
In that regard.
No.
Like why did they make it like that? The whole like scavenger hunt aspect of it was bizarre as fuck and very, very overly detailed.
Way too
like when
detailed.
You see the notes that they had for him to all these things to do and stuff like it's really well thought out, almost too thought out.
Right.
And again, that leads to me like what? So clearly the whole point was just to kill this guy, I guess.
Seems like
they're not going to get that money.
Yeah.
There's no way he's going to be able to pull that off.
Right.
So what's the whole fucking point?
I don't know. And also, he got $8,000.
Yeah.
So that
he didn't
means,
even get come close to what they wanted.
No. And there was what? Five people involved. So that's less than $2,000 a piece.
Yeah.
Like you could, I don't know, like sell some shit of in your house that you're hoarding and make that kind of cash.
Yeah.
I know. I don't quite understand it either. And then the whole like weird circular route that they had that was like maybe 2 or 3 miles in circumference. Yeah. And like they have one of my favorite characters, Jerry Clark, the FBI guy, who is basically like there's one highway, I think I-90, that either goes to New York State or Ohio, and Erie, Pennsylvania is like 20 minutes from either. Like if you're going to rob a bank, you get in your car and you drive to Ohio or to New York and you're out of the state in 20 minutes. Instead, they have this guy doing like a racetrack thing around the bank that was just robbed.
Yeah.
Like even that's dumb.
Was Jerry the guy who like he said he met up with Bill and Bill like right away goes, just so you know, I'm the smartest person.
And he's like, yeah, well, there's only like, 2 people in the room.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That guy was really charming. I like that was a good character.
There's always these true crime docs always have a like smarmy prosecuting attorney, a disheveled Jewish defense attorney kind of guy, and then like a kind of like likable FBI dude.
Yeah. And that guy was very likable.
Yeah. He's the likable FBI dude. Yeah. And he was just like, well, there's only 2 people in the room, so that means it's you.
Yeah.
You're smarter than me. Yeah. And then, so we have this bizarre bomb that has like red herrings, wires that have nothing to do with the bomb, a plastic cell phone, yet it's intricate, well-made.
It worked.
It worked.
It fucking worked.
Like, and
that's
it worked.
That's the reason enough to like know that these people aren't super stupid.
Right.
Like there was all kinds of planning involved with this.
Yeah.
Like just making that route that they came probably took fucking days.
Yeah, the scavenger hunt thing.
Yeah, it was just for no reason at all. Did they expect him to accomplish any of that?
There's
no way.
Well, no, because the bomb went off within an hour. So, like, yeah. there was no way he could have accomplished all of that.
And the cops, like, themselves, like, went through that route that he was supposed to do. And they're like, that it would have been impossible yeah. for him to do this.
Well, and the first one is, like, go to the McDonald's. And in the flower bed is a coffee yeah. can. And in the coffee can is another note, mm-hmm. which is going to send you to the woods where there's, like, a flag that says Vietnam uh-huh. on it.
And the stuff was there.
Yeah.
They actually had those things there. Well, so, like, Marjorie or Bill was dropping that shit off.
Yeah.
You can't imagine, like, working at the McDonald's. Like, some dude, huge dude in overalls is planting a coffee can in the fucking flowers. Should we look into this?
No, because it's Erie, Pennsylvania. Like, just let it go. Yeah, well, that's Bill, Big
probably
Bill
his,
Rothstein.
Probably his jar of piss.
And yeah.
Or his fertilizer.
Oh, my God. That's funny.
But I like that. I thought that was really creepy when... that other cop, like they went to that tree,
yeah,
and they saw it was probably Bill in the van,
right,
and like driving up,
right,
and then it just pulled away,
yeah,
and that in his head he's like, oh man, like who was that? Like that was probably and it was, I think it was Bill that was yeah. probably just checking it out or some shit,
right, yeah,
they could have like figured it out a lot earlier if they like went after him or something like that.
Well, and also we find out. And, yeah, I'm not sure these cops are. We also find out at one point that the local cops didn't share much information with the FBI as
yeah.
well.
That's super frustrating. That whole, like, and they delve into that. They're like, well, it just happens.
Yeah.
They don't like the FBI, so yeah. they're going to keep the information to themselves. Like, holy shit, like, to the detriment of the case and everyone involved. It's like
and
just because of their,
people.
Their stupid fucking, like, ego issues
yeah.
or something.
And then there's innocent people being sentenced and guilty people who aren't being sentenced.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, that you're doing a great job there, local PD.
Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
That part was really frustrating.
So we have this crazy cast of characters, like this, who think they're geniuses, but didn't plan out the route well enough. Mm-hmm. They didn't time it, apparently. You know, mm-hmm. they didn't think about that part. And then we have Brian Wells, who's a pizza delivery guy who may or may not have been involved, who gets a fucking bomb strapped to his neck and sent to the PNC Bank to get $250,000. Yeah. While he's in there, he helps himself to a lollipop.
Yeah.
And then gets only $8,000, and then Charlie Chaplin's his way out.
Yeah. Oh, another character that I thought was going to play into it more, but they never really comes back into play was that other pizza guy who died.
Yes.
And like
Robert Panetti.
Early on, they're like, what's going on here? And yeah. then that never really comes back into play.
No.
And so you're like, well, what the fuck happened there? Like, was that just completely coincidental that this other pizza guy like just died like a few days later?
No.
That seems so nutty.
Yeah. Well, he overdosed, I guess. Like, that's what they're saying was he moved his FBI interview from like a Friday to a Monday, and that Sunday night he died.
That's so weird.
And then like one of the conspirators say that he was involved.
Mm-hmm.
Did he just
kill himself? So he didn't. That's another very like frustrating thing about this documentary is that like, almost everyone involved is just dead by the end.
Yeah.
So there's no real like, well. They're dead now.
Right.
So if you want more answers, there's no way we can give them to you.
And there's no deathbed confessions either, which would have been awesome.
Yeah.
Like, who goes to their deathbed and doesn't give up? I mean,
they didn't give up shit.
They didn't give up
Bill,
shit.
Bill didn't give up a goddamn thing.
Well, and Bill apparently, I mean, I guess what they're saying is that Bill knew he was dying. Like, he had had really bad cancer and never did anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he died, like, riddled with cancer. So he knew for probably a year or more that he was going to die of cancer and still didn't give up any information.
Yeah.
Which is bullshit.
Which is bullshit.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Bill.
Fuck you, Bill.
Keep in your overalls and go to hell.
Yeah.
Marjorie and Bill would be such fun characters to play in like a movie.
Right.
They're fascinating people.
Yeah.
Like in those interviews and stuff they have with them.
Oh,
like,
I know.
They're very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Those were some of my favorite parts, actually, were like the interviews with them. Because, they just are.
Can I ask you, have you ever been interviewed by the police?
No.
Okay.
I've been like, this had nothing to do with the police.
Right. Because, like, I have, mm-hmm. and it's terrifying.
Yeah.
And to be able to watch Bill sit there calmly, pass a lie detector test. And actually, like, spin them to the point where they're, like, thanking him
mm-hmm.
for giving up information and stuff. It's, like, fascinating.
Yeah.
Because, like, I would chirp like a fucking parakeet If I had to go in and sit in an interview room, I'd just be like, no, I didn't do it. Yes, I did. Everybody else did. Here's everything.
Yeah.
Please be nice.
I liked how that – was it Jerry that was like – just knew he was going to pass the lie detector test?
Yeah.
Was just like – oh, yeah, that didn't surprise me at all.
Yeah.
Like, he, like, expected them to.
Right.
He's like, it doesn't matter because I'm sure he kind of...
He figured out a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's, like, just fucking cool as a cucumber. Yeah. He's not going to be shaken by what's going on.
Well, he said that he fell asleep during it. During the lie detector test, he fell asleep. Like, you just take, like, 12 Xanax and you're going to pass that fucking thing because your heart rate's not going to do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're just going to fucking... And that's how they determine, I believe, is heart rate and blood pressure or something. But, So the bank robbery were, and like the cops, I mean, he didn't get far. Brian Wells didn't even get.
No.
did he even get to the first stop or not?
Didn't they get him in like before he even went to the McDonald's?
I think so.
So I don't think he got even one of the things he was supposed to get.
Right. And like, then they, because he was out in the public, they stopped traffic. Which meant the bomb squad couldn't get there in time.
That was also very... Hearing that was super frustrating.
I know.
Like, there's this guy was just fucked from
he
the
was
get-go.
Fucked.
Yeah.
And then, and like, it's... I don't know. I hate that cops handcuff people
who
are like...
They handcuffed him and then run away.
Yeah.
They're like, well...
Bye.
Yeah, that was also infuriating.
That tape, you actually get to see the videotape of the cop cutting his shirt and being like, yep, that's a bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they just run away.
Yeah.
And he's just like, help me.
And then you see them kind of being like talking to each other, like, I don't know what the fuck to do. It's like Erie, Pennsylvania. This has never happened.
Let's just wait for the bomb squad. But then, yeah, the traffic's all fucked up, so the bomb squad can't get there. And then when they, I honestly didn't expect them to actually show it happening of the thing blowing up, which is really shocking. And like, there's like a piece of the bomb that like, it's a very cinematic in a way. The piece of the bomb like tumbles towards the camera and shit. I was like, Jesus Christ.
And we have two. The other thing that kind of made me, I don't know if I would say laugh or whatever, but I thought it was amusing, is that you have this pizza place that basically employs mid-40s pizza delivery guys. Because Brian and this other dude were like 43 and 46 or something.
Yeah.
It's like, what is going on in this Mamma Mia pizza place?
Yeah.
Brian Wells here, he was supposed to go on a scavenger hunt.
And he was supposed to go from point A to point B to point C, where the keys would be given him to release this bomb.
This made worldwide news.
The purpose of the pizza bomber plot? Money.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs. A gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Okay, so just trying to put all this in perspective. So we have the group, her and Bill.
Yeah.
We have the Brian Wells, the collar, the bomb, the PNC Bank. He gets stopped. He gets blown up.
So this is clearly for somebody who has seen the show, because otherwise you're not going to know what the fuck we're talking about.
No, yeah, you should. If you have not watched, stop, pause this, go watch it, come back and listen to this episode.
Because this is all over the place.
Yeah, and it's because it's like, how do you, I mean, to do this literally would not even make even much sense, because there's so much going on.
Another aspect of this really made me like respect like detective work, because like figure out any of this?
I don't know.
I was kind of like the fact that like they could figure out any of it would like is like crazy to me.
Yeah.
And a lot of it they didn't, which like kind of makes sense because like it's just it's way too bizarre and nutty. Like,
well, like they say, it's not guilty and innocent. It's guilty and not guilty. So like you're trying to figure out who's guilty, who's not guilty. And by a series of interviews, because they show all the fucking interviews they do, you know, like they have tapes of all that stuff. And then we find out that Marjorie has got dead boyfriends.
Yeah.
You know, like in her past.
Yeah.
Not boyfriend, but boyfriends.
Multiple. Wasn't it like three or four?
It was a few. Yeah. Her husband died of mysterious circumstances.
Yeah. And I don't think it's incorrect to state that it's pretty obvious she was involved with all of them.
I don't think it's I think you're safe there.
Yeah.
I think you could go on the witness stand and
she straight up confessed to one of them, didn't
two
she?
Two of them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the one in the 80s, she said that it was self-defense.
Yeah.
And that she killed him. And then we find out from a jailhouse snitch that the guy was just sleeping.
Yeah.
And she just fucking shot him. And then she ends up confessing to Jim Roden's death, who she shotgunned in the head because it sounded like he was going to go to the cops about the bank robbery.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how then Big Bill gets involved.
Yeah.
And he goes over there and, I don't know, does weird shit. And they put him in a bag and throw him in a freezer.
Yeah, his relationship with Marjorie was very, very odd.
Yeah.
And interesting. Like, I don't know if they were, like, even, like, sexually involved. It's never really stated whether they were really, like, a couple ever.
Yeah.
But, yeah, why would he, if he had never done anything like that in his life before, why would he all of a sudden do that for Marjorie?
I don't know.
It's very, very odd.
I know. Well, it's like narcissistic, like psychopaths, like they have no empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, how do these people find each other?
Yeah. Like, but they clearly had friendships with other people.
Yeah.
Like in the past, at least.
Yeah.
Like Marjorie had that friend that, you know, she knew her pretty well, at least. And then same with Bill.
Yeah.
So, and then what happened? Like something just occurred and they both just like went completely over the edge and were unable to have human contact. Or
I guess. And that's what happens when you live in Erie, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
It snows a lot up there, you know, and you lose contact and you have fishing buddies.
Yeah.
You go fishing. And that's when we meet Ken Barnes. Marjorie's fishing buddy, who's also ends up being a co-conspirator and also a hoarder, and a crack dealer, and we find out Brian Wells liked to fuck prostitutes and like would fuck them at Ken's house, pay them, and then they would go and buy crack from Ken.
Yeah.
So it's like a
very convenient.
It's like that the fucking FBI guy says one stop shopping.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like the fucking target of prostitution and crack smoke. But so we find out about Marjorie's past, which is she's got multiple deaths in her past and was not convicted of killing one of her boyfriends because she said it was in self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
And so now she feels like she can just talk her way, I guess, out of anything about it. Was there anything about this that like about her that was really surprising to you?
It did seem like she, the fact that she never gave up any information to like the cops and stuff, but she was like really, seemed pretty mouthy to people in prison. Like she would like give up information to people in prison. It seemed like she'd talk about stuff like, what did she expect? Like them not to say shit. And she clearly made a lot of enemies.
Yeah.
Like she didn't seem volatile. Like a very nice lady.
No. Did you ever know one of those kind of ladies?
Oh, yeah.
Or people, yeah.
Of course.
There was always one in, like, a neighborhood that would just yell and scream. Yeah. And you're just like, why are you so miserable?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
There's probably plenty of people like that.
Oh, of
Not
course.
To her level, but.
Well, I think depression and anxiety and mental illness, like, the language of mental illness sometimes can be anger, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, like, and it's fascinating to watch her Skype interview with that lawyer dude.
Yeah.
Because she's just angry and not confessing to anything and being like, I'm being railroaded.
Yeah. It's like, why did she even agree to do that?
I think just yet another person to talk to and yell at.
Yeah.
And to try to win. I think people who are manipulative like that and narcissistic just always want to win over everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, bring me someone else and I'll convince them too, kind of thing.
Yeah. But yeah, she was a very angry lady. Damn.
Yeah, she's pretty angry.
So, yeah, it's when they're trying to tell us, like, oh, she was very charming and would get people on her side or whatever, it's hard to see because all we really see is just this kind of like very visibly upset, not seemingly coherent even person who's just mad all the time.
Yeah.
But, you know.
And then they show the producer guy who contacted Marjorie, I think in 2004 or five, because this murder was 2003, the bank robbery thing, and he contacted her pretty early on and had boxes and boxes of letters and then phone calls and then interviews and stuff with her. So he tried for years to get her to confess. Mm-hmm. And one thing she would not confess to was being the mastermind, which you would think with someone of an ego like hers, the first thing she would want to be is like, yes, I did it. Like, it was my fucking idea and it's brilliant.
Yeah.
And it's,
I found that interesting too. Like, why would she never admit it towards the end? Because clearly it was like,
well, especially because Bill's not going to go away for life. He's dead.
Yeah.
You know, like, so, like, I don't know either. I don't get, but maybe that's because you and I aren't insane.
Yeah,
I don't know. Or, you know, like maybe that's just what not insane people do.
Yeah, maybe she just liked the idea of it being a huge mystery forever.
Yeah,
it's got us talking about it.
It sure does. So. Yeah, it's got a documentary made about it. Yeah. I think there was a book too.
Oh, there has to be.
I think there was.
I would love to read a book about this.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure there was a book, and she was probably pissed about the book too. I wonder. Mm-hmm. It's funny. It would have been fun to see if she'd seen the movie.
Yeah.
And if she had any thoughts about the movie.
Wait, that like crappy comedy?
Yeah,
one?
The crappy
like,
comedy.
They got every detail wrong. He didn't look anything like Jesse Eisenberg. That movie was so bad. Oh my God.
I can't 30
minutes or less.
I can't believe they made a movie. Was he a pizza delivery guy?
Pizza delivery guy, and Danny McBride and like Nick Swardson are like the bad guys who strap a bomb to his chest in order to get him to rob a bank. So they really did steal the
premise.
Basic premise of it.
Right.
That's about it.
But made like, it into a bumbling into a comedy.
Oh, and it's real bad.
Wow, I bet.
Yeah.
Let's get back to this. So we have Marjorie, who's killed her ex-boyfriends, who's recently killed an ex-boyfriend, Jim, who's now in the freezer. And now
the
cops are closing in on things. Mm-hmm. They, oddly enough, don't suspect Bill.
Yeah.
Well, but he gives up info and gets, hadn't been sentenced. He was free on bail before his trial. But did they ever mention if he goes to trial or did he die before a trial?
I think he died before that even happened.
Right.
Like that was another aspect where it's just like, wow, that there was like zero justice in that regard.
Right. So nobody ever was convicted of killing Brian Wells.
I don't think so.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Because Marjorie died too. Like,
yeah, she died
later on, but.
Yeah. After she's been in prison. Then we hear from.
Isn't it posthumously like that they find out that he wasn't even involved?
Well, because the prostitute.
Yeah.
Hoopsick.
Yeah.
She said that because she was involved, basically. Yeah. And she was like, Brian didn't have any idea.
She lured him into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they wanted someone who could be tricked easily.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, I know this fucking pizza delivery dude.
Uh-huh.
And they got him. So, yeah, I don't think he, which explains the carefree Charlie Chaplin swing of the cane gun and the lollipop and then the kind of like, hey, can you just get, I mean, if he knew that bomb was real, he'd be screaming his fucking ass off.
Yeah
You know,
but that makes it even more weird that their plan was so intricate when it's like, we need to find someone who can be duped easily.
Yeah,
it's like, so clearly he's not the smartest cookie.
No,
he's not gonna be able to pull this off.
No.
At all. So why make this so fucking intricate and complicated?
Know.
Like, it makes no sense.
I think it's kind of a shot over the bow of the cops. I think part of it is the ego trip, which is we're going to make this so complicated that the cops are going to be confused. And they're also going to be like, we're dealing with some fucking geniuses here. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
The way they complicated this so much, what a bunch of crazy geniuses.
Yeah.
I think they watch too many like Bond movies or something.
Uh-huh.
You know, like that's, it's just like the fucking bumbling. It's almost fucking Scooby-Doo if you think about it.
It is, yeah.
You know, I could have got away with it too if it hadn't been for you.
It's very, very Scooby-Doo-esque for sure. Yeah.
It's all fucked up, man.
There's very cartoony elements to it.
Of course. I mean, silly. Her shaving her eyebrows is a cartoony element of it, where it's like that jailhouse, I don't want to call her a snitch, but the jailhouse partner or whatever was saying like she would shave her eyebrows for hours just to make the guards think she was cray cray.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like then they talk about master manipulation and shit. But I do feel that there's people that aren't master manipulators. They're just so crazy that people can't even think on their level.
Yeah,
because they wouldn't. No one would, like you and I were like, why don't we just confess?
Yeah,
but nobody like it's like hard for people who aren't that insane, I don't think, to be able to feel that way, you know, with people.
We gotta cast this doc. Gotta cast this doc.
So we do play this game on SupDoc called Cast This Doc, where we cast this doc. So of like you could pick anybody, actor, living or dead, to portray any of these people and what would be the biopic of this documentary. So what do you think?
I liked your suggestion for Marjorie because I think a big factor was just how good she was in Monster was Charlize Theron.
Yeah.
And also the no eyebrows factor. Right. So I think she could probably pull this off very well.
Okay, let me throw another one at you.
Yeah.
She'd have to gain some weight and get kind of, but she'd be like Hollywood ugly. So Susan Sarandon.
Okay. I could see that.
Yeah. She'd have to get a little weight on her, but like, I think she could pull that off.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about Big Bill Rothstein there?
The guy that came to my mind was John Carroll Lynch, who was he's a character actor who was in I think he ended up being like the killer in Zodiac.
Oh, right.
But he's always great. He was in this movie called The Invitation. He's really good. He's got that frame.
Right.
He's a big dude.
Right, right, right.
Doesn't have a mustache or anything, but I can just see him rocking some overalls.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
What about John Goodman? Could he pull that off?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He would be really good.
I don't know if he has quite the Jewish, like, features, but he could probably pull that off.
I think that's a really good suggestion.
Especially because he's got that, it's like in Raising Arizona, he does that kind of, like, nice, frightening thing. Oh, yeah. and Barton Fink.
Barton Fink, for sure.
I mean,
yeah.
He has that element in Barton Fink. Where, hey, Barton.
Oh, he does.
I'm real tired.
With 10 Cloverfield Lane, for sure.
Yeah.
It's where he veers between, like, friendly and frightening.
Right, right.
Like, he can pull that off really well.
Yeah. Let's see. Who else? What about Brian Wells?
Who would be a good guy for that? This guy's a little... I don't know why Tom Noonan popped into my head, but he's like really tall.
Right.
We probably need to find somebody a bit more like meek. Did you mention Buscemi or something?
I mentioned Steve Buscemi earlier, but that's only because all these like cool looking character actors always come up, like William H. Macy.
Yeah.
And what about, who's the guy
from... Willem Dafoe or something?
Oh, whoa.
Might be good for that.
You know who just popped in my mind? The guy from Children's Hospital, the comedian.
Rob Hubble or something?
Yeah, Rob Hubble.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I guess because the bald head thing.
Yeah.
What about David Cross?
Okay, yeah.
As Brian Wells.
Maybe. I don't know about that one.
Yeah.
David Cross. I mean, he's got the bald factor, but that's about it. Glasses.
Yeah, bald and glasses.
Yeah.
That's what I was going for. And then, I don't know.
That's another one I wish that they really delved into more was, like, just more about that guy.
Brian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't really know a ton about him.
It's really all about Marjorie and a lot about Bill, but Brian gets short shrift in this. I mean, they talk to his landlady.
And there's a lot of empathy for him just considering because of how crazy it is and that happened to him.
He died, yeah.
Was insane. Of course, there's empathy there, but like they didn't really delve into him a lot.
No. I'm not trying to be a jackass about this, but when they show everyone's siblings, Bill Rothstein's brother, Brian Wells' brother, they all look like them, but like normal looking.
Yeah.
They all look like regular American, like got a good job, but. it's so weird because like it's like looking at them, but I don't know why these people look so weird and their siblings look so normal.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of weird that way. You know, I wonder if in my family, if I look the normal one or from the crazy looking one. Yeah, my siblings in the doc about my life, they'll be like, "Boy, they look normal. He looks crazy."
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But and what about Jerry? Jerry Clark is the FBI guy.
I can barely remember what he even looked like.
Kind of slightly Italian.
Man.
That's a tough one.
That is a tough one. Who's like just a solid, like, what about like Ron Livingston or something like that?
Oh, that's interesting.
Jerry Clark. I just can't really picture him. He was a pretty basic looking dude, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, I mean, he's an FBI guy.
Yeah,
so.
He's a classic FBI guy.
He's a classic G-man.
A classic G-man character.
Yeah. So to sum this up, what do you think is the theme here for this doc?
Man. Confusion. I don't know. There's so many confusing things that don't really get. I liked like that some of it got figured out, but a lot of it didn't. And I honestly kind of liked that. I liked it made the whole the police procedure thing seem really not really arbitrary, but like there's just some shit you're never gonna figure out. I don't know. It made me like respect detective work a lot because I was just like, how the hell would you ever figure any of this out?
Right. Well, you need a lot of the public because like at one point that dude comes out and says, yeah, I saw her driving down the wrong side of the highway.
Yeah.
You know, like and this other guy's like, yeah, I saw them at the payphone. Mm-hmm. Like that was years later. But you need, you know,
exactly.
The public
that came out like so much after the fact.
Yeah.
How would people even remember that shit?
I don't know.
I can't remember like a lot of shit I did yesterday.
Yeah, right.
But again, like I think that there are certain things that like it'll jog your memory will get jogged.
Right. Well, let me ask you this: does good triumph over evil in this, or does evil triumph over good in this?
I would definitely not say good did not triumph over evil. In
right.
This one. It's like again, it's just like
nobody wins in this fucking doc.
Not really, but I did think that it was. I mean, there's definitely some justice in terms of figuring out that. Because they lied and said that Brian Wells was involved with it.
Yeah.
And then that woman came forward and, you know, said that he wasn't. So they figured that out.
Yeah.
So that was good. And, like, that's got to be a huge weight off the shoulders of the Wells family.
Yeah.
So I'd say that that's reason enough for this thing to exist.
Right.
And besides it being just interesting and fun to watch, I thought.
Yeah.
The fact that they actually got something out of it like that was really cool. You know, it's not going to, they didn't solve everything. They didn't figure everything out, but that's, you know, this is the fact that there was like, some closure for the family on
true.
That end.
Yeah.
I thought was pretty great.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, it would be nice to hear, even if it's 10, 12, 15 years later that your fucking brother wasn't involved, you know, in something like this, even though he ended up being murdered. But so I know you've done, Doug Benson's show a couple times. How was that?
I just did it once. I did like the Doug Loves Movies.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's cool. Where'd you do that at?
Did it at Cobb's.
Oh, fun.
And like he'd seen me. I was hosting for Scott Thompson at Punchline.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was like the first show on Saturday. And I got off stage and it had gone really well. And one of the managers at Punchline was like, oh, Doug Benson loved your set. And I was like, what?
Oh, nice.
And she's like, oh, he's sitting right over there. I was like, oh, my God. Like, I was glad I didn't know he was there because I probably would have been way more nervous before I went up.
Yeah.
And then he came over and was like, do you want to do Doug Loves Movies? I was like, what?
Oh, so wow. Cool.
And but I never gave my info. I didn't tell, you know. And so I was like, oh, shit.
Good move.
I'm an idiot. And so I was like, how is he even going to get a hold of me? And I messaged up Amy Miller.
Oh, yeah.
And she was like, oh, I'll send him a message. And then he like messaged me up a couple weeks later and I got to do the show and. He was going to do a Getting Doug with High thing here in like April, but then it just didn't happen. He messaged me about that, but then he had to end up canceling it.
Right.
But since then, I haven't heard anything.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. That's a fun podcast to be a part of.
Yeah.
What's coming up for you? You got any shows coming up?
Oh, yeah. What am I doing? I'm going to be, I'm going to the East Coast for the first time in October.
Shut up.
Yeah.
For the first time in your life or first time doing comedy? Oh, wow.
First time in my life.
Where are you going?
Shows. Just in New York, Maine.
Never heard of it.
Connecticut. Yeah. I've never even been to New York.
Wow.
So I'm very excited. I'm going again with Chris Knatzer and Jeff Samaria.
Yeah.
Doing another, like, because we did something in March.
Yeah, I remember that.
And like just around like up Seattle, Portland, and then down through like Boulder and LA and stuff. And so we're going to the East Coast for like 10 days. And that's going to be really cool.
That's fun.
And I'm hosting the last weekend in July at Cobb's.
Okay. Do you know for who?
David Koechner.
No way. Yeah. Our favorite cast this
you mentioned him
guy.
Earlier.
Yeah. Any FBI agent, we always, or a cop, we say David Koechner.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Could he pull off a Jerry Clark?
Absolutely, actually.
David Koechner is Jerry Clark.
Maybe we should have try to get him on the podcast and we'll just have him just be every...
I'll bring that up to him about like you're the go-to guy.
That'd be awesome. So and then on Instagram people can follow you.
Yeah, Instagram, Twitter,
and you're
Facebook,
on the Twitter.
All just my name, Chad Opitz.
Chad Opitz on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, on and on. Well, thank you so much, Chad. This was delightful.
Well, thank you for having me, Paco.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about SupDoc at supdocpodcast.com. And follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
And please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes.
Our theme song was written by David Siegel, and our show was engineered by Will Scoville.
If you want us to cover a doc, have suggestions for guests, or you just want to reach out, please email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.